He looked away and caught Berger's gaze. He motioned with his head for him to lead Magda away. "Go with Berger," he ordered her as he pushed her from his embrace.
"You'll follow?" Magda asked.
There was a severity in her voice that would not be ignored.
"When I have your mother," Kluger lied, "I already know the way to get past the first four rooms."
He turned to Berger.
"When you discover how to get past the fifth room, you can leave instructions for me on the landing."
He reached into his tunic and brought out a short stub of pencil and a small leather-bound book.
"Write down what you learn. I'll follow."
He squeezed Magda's hand.
"I promise I'll follow."
"Find my mother, Kluger," Magda begged. "Save her. Promise me you'll save her."
"I'll do everything I can," Kluger vowed.
A sudden thought occurred to him, and he glanced at the door to Abraham's room.
"I'll get the elf to help me find her. There's no better tracker in all of the mortal realms than an elf. But you must hurry now. If Abraham knows you're trying to get through the dungeon, he may decide to go with you instead of helping me to look for Inga."
The lie was bitter in Kluger's mouth, but it had the desired effect. Magda didn't resist Berger's efforts to start her down the stairs and lead her off towards the trophy room. He hoped the thief was as smart as he seemed. Certainly, of all of them, he was their best chance to get around the traps. Once he was certain Magda and Berger were gone, Kluger turned onwards towards Abraham's room. He did intend to fight the demon, just in case it still had any claim upon Magda. The elf would make a useful ally in such a fight, if he could be convinced of his own peril. Kluger knocked at the door, but there was no answer from within. A sense of danger nagged at him, and he had his pistol back in his hand when he turned the key. He stepped into the room. Candles burned on the table near the window, but just as he'd found with Thilo's room, the occupant was nowhere to be found. Perplexed, Kluger walked back into the hall. As he stepped out from the doorway, he was struck from behind. A cloth was crushed against his face while a steely grip clamped down on his wrist and kept him from using the pistol. He fumbled with his other hand to draw another weapon, but the pungent smell of the cloth was already numbing his senses and draining the strength from his limbs. He thought of Alric and the way that Lothar had subdued the Dwardin. The witch hunter's legs buckled beneath him and he wilted to the floor. His attacker flowed downwards with him and kept the drugged cloth against his nose and mouth. As his mind started to fade into darkness, Kluger was surprised by the identity of his foe. It wasn't Lothar. It was Abraham. From the intensity of the elf's gaze, Kluger had the impression Abraham would have been happier using a knife than Lothar's stupefying vapours.
Chapter 10. "I do not understand why you want him alive." Abraham's voice cut through the darkness that had enveloped Kluger's mind. He tried to move, but found that his hands were tied behind him. He was sitting on a chair and the cords were fastened to its back to hold him in place. Carefully, he tested his legs, but they too were bound and connected to the chair.
"Contingency," the answer came in the sardonic purr of Lothar Krebs. "If this doesn't work, we may need him."
Kluger opened his eyes slowly as he tried to hide the fact that he was awake from his captors. He saw that he was in the dining hall. Candles and lamps blazed everywhere. The chair to which he was bound was pushed up near the wall, only a few yards from the door to the corridor outside. The other chairs had been removed from the table, thrown aside in disarrayed heaps. Plates and cutlery, glasses and uneaten food were likewise strewn round the floor. The head of the table, where Count Wulfsieg had opened his own throat and used his own blood to summon the Mardag, was beyond Kluger's field of vision. It was from that direction the voices came.
"This is the best way, the only way to be sure," Lothar declared. "If not, we will have to make a fight of it. That is why we need the witch hunter."
With excruciating slowness, Kluger started to turn his head to face Lothar. Perhaps the motion would have been gradual enough to escape the alchemist, but the keen eyes of the elf caught him almost immediately. Abraham stalked over and seized Kluger by the chin. His slender fingers forced the witch hunter to look at him.
"Kluger is awake," Abraham told Lothar. "Are you sure you still want him alive?"
There was an impersonality to the question that made Kluger's blood run cold. Lothar came away from the end of the table. Kluger could see now that Thyla was chained to a throne-like seat that had served the Count. The thick loops of steel were coiled around his body, circling his arms and chest, even his throat and forehead. All that Thylo could move was his eyes. These, Kluger saw, had already turned to pools of blood. The demon was inside its new host.
"You're wondering, no doubt, what I am doing,"
Lothar paced before Kluger. The witch hunter's brace of pistols was belted around his waist. A sideways glance showed him that Abraham had his sword.
"Heresy," Kluger said. "Demonology. What you're doing is obscene, unforgivable."
Lothar smiled and nodded.
"All true," he conceded. "But you may also add necessary to your description. Desperate moments demand desperate measures."
A cruel laugh rippled from the alchemist.
"I don't think I need to explain that to you. Abraham tells me you released Birnger and Magda. How did it feel, lying to the woman you love?"
Kluger kept all emotion from his voice when he answered.
"I didn't lie. If that eavesdropping elf hadn't waylaid me, I would even now be looking for Inga Hausler."
"That should be easy," Lothar laughed, "since you know where you put her body."
A gesture from Lothar had Abraham grab Kluger's chin and force the witch hunter to look at the table in front of Thylo. He was stunned by what he saw. Saskia was sprawled there, lying over the spot that had been stained by the Count's cursed blood. Around her had been drawn a pentacle, and the woman's head and limbs stretched away into each point of the design. There was a dazed, dreamy look in her eyes, even more pronounced than her usual stupor.
"You see, we searched for Inga ourselves," Lothar said. "She could have helped bolster the ritual I have in mind. Abraham went looking for her. An elf is very good at finding people, you know."
"Maybe she's just better at hiding than he is at finding," Kluger said, pulling his chin free from Abraham's grip.
Lothar shook his head.
"I think not. You released Magda and Birnger, but you went into Thylo's room with the intention to kill. Abraham watched you. Why go to kill my son, but free the others? It can only be because you accept the theory of arcane chains, that the demon is irrevocably bound to the pattern of host and victim. Even in your affection, I don't think you send the demon to run amok through Ravensback. That means you considered Magda as safe as Birnger. The only way that could be is if her mother is dead."
The witch hunter struggled against his bonds. To have his crime known by a creature like Lothar was too much to bear.
"I don't blame you," Lothar said, and laid a consoling hand on Kluger's shoulder. "The things we do for love can often flirt with madness."
He waved his hand towards Saskia.
"My dear wife wearied of life when she couldn't have more children. I caught her..."
He hesitated, a look of remorse briefly on his face. His eyes flashed with a terrible resolve when he glanced again at his possessed son.
"To prevent her from trying again, I gradually conditioned her to a certain potion."
He reached into a pocket and withdrew a silver flask.
"A few drops in her milk, in her tea, in her soup. After a few weeks, she was addicted. She felt listless and weary, but she no longer desired death. You see, she needed me again.
Only I could give her the mixture that had become life itself.
As Lothar spoke, Saskia showed the first sign of motion. She turned her head and looked at the flask. The expression in her eyes was of the most abominable lust Kluger had ever seen, a hunger that transcended flesh and rooted itself in the very soul. Kluger could not look at the ravenous appeal in Saskia's eyes. He turned instead to Lothar.
A damned heretic! A foul slave of chaos!
Lothar sneered at him.
Like any fanatic, everything must be termed in absolutes. I am no worshipper of the dark gods. There are ways to harness the tremendous arcane energies they represent, however. You can exploit chaos without submitting to it.
I've heard those same words from many a witch and sorcerer before they were consigned to the flames.
Kluger glanced at Abraham. The elf was fingering the pommel of the silvered sword.
Your confederate doesn't appear happy with this kind of talk.
Abraham understands that I am the only chance he has to be free from the demon, Lothar said.
He gave Kluger a solemn look.
I may be wrong. Even with the links broken, it could still try to consume the hosts prepared for it.
Why waste time gloating over this man? Abraham asked. When you are finished, he will die anyway.
Lothar bristled at the interruption.
There is still time. Go and watch Thilo if my conversation bores you. Let me know when he begins to weep.
He waited for the elf to walk away before turning back to Kluger.
If I could trust you, I wouldn't need to kill you, Lothar said. You know now that I have delved into forbidden lore. I will show you that it has been a good purpose. What is more, I know about the murder you have committed. The authorities won't take my word against yours, but if it should reach Magda's ears, well, I don't think you would care for that.
He smiled and glanced back at Abraham.
Don't worry about the elf. Whatever happens, he won't say anything. Are we in accord, then? Will you swear to Sigmar that neither by action nor word will you move against me?
Kluger looked past Lothar to where Thilo sat chained in his chair and Saskia lay sprawled upon the table.
What are you planning to do?
I've said that we do drastic things for love, Lothar began.
He reached into his coat and drew out a gruesome-looking dagger.
This is the ferber the Count used to sacrifice himself. This instrument is what made his revenge possible. It called the Mardag from the realm of chaos. With this, I can call the demon.
His face drooped as he gazed at his family.
Thilo is already lost to me. Even if the Mardag were exorcised, now that it has been inside him, all that would be left would be a blood-mad maniac. However, I can draw the demon out. I can send it into Saskia's body.
And you say this is done for love?
Kluger scoffed.
The strongest love of them all, Lothar said. The love of life itself. To save my own, I must sacrifice others. Quite literally in this case. To continue, Saskia is a perfect receptacle for the demon. Her body is plagued by a most terrible hunger. The Mardag consumes the minds of memories of those it possesses. When it possesses Saskia, it will also possess her addiction. It will become as she is. Utterly subservient to whoever can feed that addiction.
You're mad to think you can control the demon, Kluger sneered. It'll destroy you and pick its fangs with your bones.
The alchemist glared back at Kluger.
It will work. I can render the fiend insensate, harmless.
The tears have begun,
Abraham called from the head of the table. The elf backed away from Thilo and drew the silvered sword from its scabbard. Lothar held the ferber to Kluger's throat.
Your answer! Quickly!
I agree, Kluger said. Lothar pressed the dagger against his skin.
Not enough, he said. Say the words, swear to Sigma, and tell the God King what you swear to do.
Rage boiled inside Kluger, but pragmatism won the moment. Dead, he could do nothing to oppose Lothar. Alive, there might be a way to stop him and still honour his vow to Sigmar. I swear, by Gal Muraz, and to mighty Sigmar, that neither by deed nor word will I bring harm to Lothar Krebs. He strained against the cords that held him to the chair. Now release me! Lothar shook his head.
After, he said, once the ritual is performed.
Furtively, he looked aside at Abraham. He removed a slender knife from his belt.
When I cut you, cry out,
he whispered, his voice so low that the words scarcely made any sound at all. Kluger nodded, though he didn't understand what the alchemist was up to.
We need Inga's blood to bait the Mardag, Lothar lectured, raising his voice. Since you have made that impossible, I will use yours instead.
He raked the knife along Kluger's left arm. The cut was shallow, but deep enough to draw blood. The witch hunter yelled in feigned agony and struggled at his bonds. Lothar leaned close to him. The bloodied knife was replaced on his belt, and he removed a little copper bottle. He made a show of gathering Kluger's blood, but none actually entered the vial. Are you finished with him? Abraham shouted. There was an edge of panic in the elf's voice now, distorting its normally melodious quality. The tears are flowing faster. A charnel stench began to fill the room. Lothar turned and walked towards the end of the table. He held the empty vial in one hand and the ferber in the other.
I have enough. The woman would have been better, but the witch hunter's blood will suffice.
Abraham looked from Thilo to Saskia. You are certain you can control it?
I am certain, Lothar assured him. There is only one thing that could give us any problems now.
If Abraham hadn't been distracted by Thilo's possession, his elfish speed would have allowed him to react when Lothar made his move. As things stood, the first he was aware of Lothar's treachery was when the ferber was buried in his heart. Lothar knelt beside his betrayed confederate. The vial pressed to his wound, gathering the elf's blood.
Human blood is good bait, but that of an elf is even better, he told Kluger. Their kind are rare, and so their blood holds an exotic flavour for the demons of Khorne.
You planned to betray him from the start, Kluger accused.
It is an unwise man who does not hedge his bets, Lothar replied.
He rose and walked to the table with the vial.
The Mardag might have ignored human blood, since it is already surrounded by what is inside Thilo's body, but it will respond to elfish blood.
He leaned over Saskia and pressed his finger to the mouth of the vial. With his finger stained crimson, he began daubing streaks across his wife's face. Kluger watched the profane ritual, but soon his gaze was drawn away from Lothar and Saskia. He looked at Thilo. It could not be his imagination. He was larger now, filling more of the chair. The chains that bound him were stretched tighter than they had been. The witch hunter realised the enormous mistake Lothar had made. He wasn't tempting a demon from the depths of Khorne's kingdom. He was drawing a demon that was already in the same room. It already had a vessel of flesh to manipulate and use. Lothar, stop! Stop it now! Kluger shouted. Lothar looked up in annoyance. The smirk on his face vanished when he heard one of the chains suddenly snap. He spun around and screamed in terror when he saw what was happening behind him. Thilo's limbs were stretching outwards, the flesh peeling back to expose blood-soaked bone. The face was cracking and splitting as the skull beneath swelled, the teeth expanding into sharpened fangs. The alchemist threw down the copper vial and snatched one of Kluger's pistols from the gunbelt. He was staggered by the recoil from the weapon, but his shot was true.
The blessed bullet smashed into Thilo's forehead and gouged a crater in the emerging skull. The damage, however, wasn't enough to root the malicious spirit. The Mardag hungered, and it would not be denied.
"Cut me loose!"
Kluger yelled as Lothar scurried away from the table. Another chain snapped, freeing one of the demon's arms.
"Hurry! There isn't much time!"
For a ghastly moment, Kluger thought the alchemist was going to abandon him. But before he darted out into the corridor, he moved to the chair and slashed the ropes.
"We must run!"
Lothar cried and seized Kluger's arms. Kluger shook him off.
"I need my weapons," he said.
The alchemist drew back and placed his hands protectively over the remaining pistol. Kluger saw that he dropped the other one after shooting the demon.
"If I'm to fight the thing, I need my weapons!"
Without waiting for a response, he snatched the gun from Lothar. "Get to the trophy room. I'll meet you there."
"You can't fight that. You have to run."
The thing that had been Thilo used its claws to rip through the last of the chains. The demon stood up, its body already a foot taller than it had been. The Mardag stared down at Saskia. The drug-dazed woman didn't even react to the grisly death that hovered over her.
"Get going!"
Kluger snarled as he pushed Lothar out of the door.
"I'll meet you in the trophy room."
He watched the alchemist flee and then turned back towards the demon. The creature was leaning towards Saskia. Her eyes were bleary and unfocused until the long fangs bit down into her cheek and gnashed away at the blood-covered flesh. Then a tortured shriek was ripped from her as abominable awareness shattered her stupor. Kluger raised his pistol and fired. He'd seen how ineffectual a single shot was against the Mardag. It was far more efficacious against the demon's victim. Saskia's screams fell silent. The demon, intent upon the elfish blood spattered across her body, was oblivious to the woman's death. Its teeth continued to gnaw at her flesh. The pistol Lothar had dropped was lying on the floor right where the demon stood. Kluger reluctantly abandoned it as lost. The silvered sword claimed by Abraham was almost as unlikely. The elf's body lay sprawled only a few feet from the feeding demon. If the Mardag took any notice of him, it could reach him in a single step.
"Sigmar, guard me," Kluger prayed, and made a dash for the sword.
Intent upon Saskia's corpse, the demon did not even glance at him as he retrieved the weapon. He stood for a moment, the urge to strike the obscene fiend raging through his soul. The sound of the Mardag's jaws chewing the woman's flesh was too much to endure. Kluger raised the blade to slash the demon from behind. It was the thought of Magda that made him hesitate. If he was wrong, if the demon would still seek the others marked for it, then he might damn her with this attack. While Lothar lived, the Mardag was bound to Thilo. Lowering his sword, Kluger ran from the dining hall. He didn't know how long the demon would linger over Saskia, but he knew where it would go once it was finished. If he could only thwart it from killing Lothar long enough for Magda to escape from the castle, she would be safe from the Mardag. Birger tried not to look at Roald's mangled body, or the fleshy mush that he decided must have been Liebgarda after the demon abandoned its host. Baron von Wernher had been an arrogant and dictatorial person, the kind of victim he would have robbed without the slightest hint of guilt. But there was something obscene about the way he died. Perhaps he was only now appreciating the full horror of Count Wulfsieg's revenge, using the child to deliver death to the parent. Magda stared at the gory tableau, disgust and fear etched across her face.
Don't let me do that to my mother," she begged Birger. "If it comes, if the demon, oh, just kill me."
The weariness and defeat in Magda's voice grated on Birger. He shared her attitude, despite how desperately he tried to cling to hope. It was a fact he wasn't happy to admit to himself.
"We've come this far," he snapped. "We're going to make it all the way. We're going to get out of the castle, and then the demon won't be able to do anything to us."
Birger tried to believe his own words, but he knew how hollow they really were. They'd passed through four of Alric's traps, but those had been comparatively easy. They'd already known how to navigate them. Now they stood before a fifth room, a hallway that had brought rolled up short and allowed the demon to catch him. Who could say how many more were beyond this one?
"I'm going to move this mess," Berger said.
He gripped the splintered pole lying beside Roald's body and used it to slide the carrion back around the corner. While that gruesome spectacle was lying at their feet, he knew it would be impossible to concentrate on the hall ahead of them and whatever trap was hidden there. When Berger came back from removing the bodies, he found Magda crouched at the edge of the landing. She was staring out into the menacing hall. For a ghastly moment, he thought she was going to dive in, kill herself the way his father had. Magda turned at the sound of his approach. She had an intense expression.
"I've been trying to puzzle out the secret of the hall. The only thing I can see is some wooden splinters on the floor."
Berger came forwards and squatted down beside her. She pointed out the debris on the floor. The colour reminded him of the pole he'd used to move the bodies. He went back and got it, ignoring the bloody residue that clung to it.
"Roald must have used this to trigger the trap," he mused. "He was still trying to figure out how to get past it when the demon caught him."
"But he didn't find a way across,"
Magda pointed out. A shudder passed through her.
"He died right here."
Berger laid a reassuring hand on her shoulder.
"We're smarter than the Baron was," he said. "He had other people do everything for him. We know how to do it for ourselves."
Neither of them spoke while Berger studied the scene. The splinters on the floor, the way the pole was broken. He glanced at the ceiling in the hall.
No,
if it had come crashing down, the pole would have snapped with a less ragged break. He turned his attention to the walls. He could just about see a few slivers of wood pressed into them.
"That's the trap," Berger declared.
He pointed to the slivers. "The walls come together and crush whatever is between them."
"What sets them off?"
Magda waved to the far side of the hall.
"How do we get past?"
Berger studied the distance between the landing and where the splinters were pressed into the wall.
"Roald must have held the pole out from here to try and trigger the mechanism."
He sighed and took a firm grip on what was left of the pole. Careful to keep every part of his own body on the landing, he thrust it into the corridor. They waited in tense silence as seconds passed without any result. Berger could hear his own heart pounding as he braced himself for a reaction. When it came, it did so with alarming abruptness. The walls smashed together, crushing the end of the pole between them. Berger stumbled back, his hands locked on the further shortened stump of splintered wood.
"How can we possibly get past that?" Magda cried out.
"I think I know how it works now," Berger said.
He hesitated before telling her his idea. He wanted to make sure.
"We'll try it again. Start counting when I throw the pole into the room."
Magda nodded. She started as soon as he made his throw.
1, 2, 3.
The pole clattered to the floor almost 3/4 of the way into the room.
8, 9, 10.
At 13, she stopped counting. The walls came crashing together and pulverised what was left of the pole.
"A count of 13, Berger stated. "That's how long we have to get from here to there. This trap operates on time. The mechanism starts as soon as something's between the walls. After a specific interval, it crushes."
"Don't," Magda said. "It's enough to imagine it. I don't need you to tell me."
Berger nodded. He removed Kluger's book and tore out a page. He scrawled a message to the witch hunter describing how he thought the trap worked and how to get past it. At the end of the missive, he advised him that if he saw remains in the hall, it meant Berger was wrong.
"We'll have to run." Magda shook her head. "Only to a count of 13. I don't know if it's possible."
"I can go across first," Berger offered. "If I'm wrong, if I don't make it, you can figure something else out."
"No,"
Magda said. She glanced down at the bloodstains on the floor.
"I'm not going to stay down here alone. Besides, if I had to watch you, I'd never have the nerve to try it myself."
"Together then," Berger said. He took Magda's hand and held it tight. When we move, start the count. He took a deep breath, nerving himself for the ordeal ahead. Then they were off, racing for their lives against the sinister machinery. The count Magda kept sounded like a funeral bell in Birnger's ears. Each number was that much closer to a horrible death. They reached the opposite landing at the count of 11. Birnger collapsed as he lunged out from the trapped room. Magda reeled and fell across the room. They heard the ferocious smack of the walls slamming together behind them. Magda started to laugh. Raucous, jubilant laughter. The thrill of survival when death had seemed assured. Birnger joined in, venting all the nervous tension that coursed through him. We made it! By Renald, we made it! Birnger rapped his knuckles three times against the floor to thank the trickster god for their good fortune. It was many minutes before they were composed enough to continue. Birnger walked around the corner of the landing. He stopped short when he saw what lay ahead of him. There was a kind of natural cavern illuminated by some phosphorescent crystal growth that peppered the rock walls. A stout door of iron stood out from one of the walls. It was the first door they'd seen since entering the dungeon.
Could that be the way out?
Magda waved at the door.
I think it is, Birnger said gravely.
When Magda gave him a curious stare, he directed her attention away from the door and to something much closer. Yawning, almost at their very feet, was a deep pit. Glowing crystals littered its walls, casting the depths in light. Slithering at the bottom of the hole were dozens of long, sinuous, copper-scaled creatures.
Ore adders, Birnger said. They feed on metal, but that doesn't mean they won't spray venom at us if we disturb them.
He pointed out the thin, narrow planks that crossed the pit. Each had long chains dangling from them into the hole, low enough that their motion was sure to be noticed by the serpents.
That's the trap, then, Magda groaned.
Try to cross the pit, and the snakes spit poison at you. Freedom's just the other side, but it's impossible to cross.
No, Birnger said. There's a way across. We just have to figure out what it is.
Birnger hoped his words sounded more confident than they felt. Kluger poured the essential salts from the Sigmarite flask. The azure powder had a faint glow to it, an aura from the celestial realm. It was ground down from the shed skins of starred drakes by the sacrosanct chambers of the Stormcast Eternals. Some among the Order of Azir were granted the privilege of carrying these dragon castings, and Kluger had been blessed to be deemed worthy of such a charge. He had only used a few pinches of the powder before, against the demon he had encountered in the past. That had been enough to restrict and bind such lowly manifestations of chaos. It would take much more to defy a fiend like the Mardag. Lothar paced about the trophy room, his robes swirling around him in his agitation.
A pentacle, he repeated as he observed Kluger's work. The shape can both attract and bind the demon.
The alchemist's words reeked of corruption and forbidden knowledge. Kluger felt ashamed to pay them any heed. Yet now he was attending Lothar's instructions as though they were spoken by Grand Lector Sigard.
There is no need to attract the Mardag, Kluger reminded him. We already have what it wants.
It was a petty thing to say, but he enjoyed the way the alchemist trembled.
Leave an opening,
Lothar said, when he had recovered enough to speak.
By all the gods, do not forget to leave a place for it to enter.
A fine one to speak of the gods, since you've flaunted their authority.
Kluger pressed the ivory stopper back into the flask and stepped out from the pentacle. There was a gap between the points that faced the doorway.
You can have faith in this much. I'll seal the pentacle if it steps inside. I'll also pray it's strong enough to hold the demon.
Lothar eyed the door that had led down to the dungeon. It wasn't the first time he'd done so. Kluger knew he was evaluating his chances against the traps, whether he was better risking them or the demon. The witch hunter tapped his pistol against one of the display cases.
Here, I'll defend you, he said. I gave my word. Go down there
and you are on your own." The alchemist started to say something, but he choked on the words. His eyes widened in terror. He stared towards the doorway and the dark corridor beyond. Kluger couldn't see anything, but he knew wizards were more attuned to the occult than men who practice less unsavory vocations. Soon the carnage-ridden reek of the demon wafted into the room. A few moments more and he heard the ghoulish sounds of dripping blood and naked feet. Kluger swung around and hurried to the spot he'd chosen to hide himself, a row of armour that flanked the pentacle. There was no point in Lothar trying to hide. The Mardag would sense him anyway. The alchemist stood several feet from the top of the pentacle and faced his approaching doom. The stench of blood preceded the demon, rolling into the room and making it stink like an abattoir. A long, bony hand gripped the edge of the doorway, the claws scratching against the iron setting. Then the Mardag stalked inwards. The once splendid clothes Thilo had worn were now gore-soaked rags. The demon had expanded, stretching and twisting the youth's body until it was twice its original size. The fangs that protruded from its skull were like glistening daggers. The boiling pools of blood that filled its sockets shone with infernal light. The first few steps it took, the demon exhibited some degree of caution. Its head swung back and forth, searching the room for ambush. Before it did more than glance at Kluger's hiding spot, the Mardag growled and locked its hellish gaze upon Lothar. A wolfish snarl rattled through the skeletal demon. It lunged forwards, intent upon its prey. Incomplete, the pentacle was nothing but dust on the floor to a demon of such profane might as the Mardag. It wouldn't stop the fiend. Kluger sprang from behind and threw himself across the floor. He had the last of the essential salts clenched in both fists. Crying out the name of Dracothian, he slammed both hands down and closed the figure. The Mardag roared when it realised what had happened. It leapt for Lothar, but the pentacle had been completed in time. As it rushed for the alchemist, a sheet of blue lightning cracked around its crimson body. The gangrel demon snarled in pain as it retreated from the barrier. It swiped its claws in Lothar's direction, only to be thwarted by another burst of electricity.
"It won't die!" Lothar screamed. "It isn't going to die!"
Kluger had seen the dragon castings reduce lesser demons to nothingness instantly. The Mardag, while hurt by the barrier, wasn't destroyed. In fact, it didn't even seem to be wounded, only provoked. It lunged again at the barrier and struggled to push its way through. "It will die," Kluger vowed. He drew his pistol and fired into the fiend. The Sigmarite bullets weren't affected by the pentacle's barrier. They passed through to crack against the Mardag's ribs, shattering three of them. The demon staggered, its skull pressing against the warding field and causing its head to be enveloped in blue electricity. The monster howled but didn't fall. Instead, it pressed against the edge of the pentacle, trying to overwhelm the barrier.
"It won't die!"
Lothar's terrified wail echoed through the trophy room. Kluger cast aside the spent pistol and whipped his silvered sword from its sheath. He dashed around the pentacle. Even he was starting to wonder if it would hold the Mardag. If the demon broke through, he was determined that it would need to get through him to reach Lothar. Alive, the alchemist ensured the demon could not leave its current host. The murderous spirit was trapped in a cage of flesh. The witch hunter's blade slashed through the barrier and raked the demon's arm. Foul ichor sprayed from the wound. It sizzled and steamed as it struck the warding field. Kluger swung again and broke two more of the exposed ribs. The Mardag swatted at him in retaliation, but its claws were thrown back by a burst of electricity. Kluger could attack across the pentacle. The demon couldn't. Then the Mardag drew back. Its arms fell to its sides. The demon fixed Kluger with a hideous gaze. He could feel its hate pressing down on him. But there was something more. There was a sardonic humour in that look, the mocking contempt born from only the bitterest enmity. The skeletal body rapidly began to decay. Strands of flesh turned to crimson slime. Blood gushed from corroded organs. Bones cracked and splintered, striking the floor as little more than shards.
The skull fell in upon itself, the glowing eyes bursting in a shower of gore. In only a matter of moments, the giant demon was nothing but a heap of putrid slush. Kluger felt cold inside as he watched the demon's dissolution. He knew that this was no victory. This wasn't the work of the barrier or his sword. The witch hunter slowly turned around. He saw Lothar's lifeless body on the ground. His face was discoloured, almost black, and there was a greenish spittle dripping from his lips. In his hand was a bottle. Certain that the Mardag would break through the barrier, the alchemist had decided to cheat the demon by taking poison. Kluger shook his head. The demon was free now, no longer held by either a magic pentacle or a cage of flesh. Magda stared down at the copper-coloured reptiles. The serpents crawled about the walls of the pit. There were what looked like iron circles embedded into the circumference. As she watched, one of the ore adders stopped in front of a metal disc. Its hood snapped open, and from its fangs it spit a stream of burning venom onto the iron. It bubbled and a molten ooze dribbled away from the circle. The snake dipped its head and started to drink the liquid sludge.
"So that's how the snakes sustain themselves," Magda said.
Birnger followed the direction of her gaze.
"Before he put them down here, Ulrich must have lined the pit with iron rods."
He pointed to several dark holes that had the same dimensions as the metal circles.
"Ore adders will follow a vein until it has been played out. They don't need to eat too often, so a single 20-foot-long rod might feed them for a year."
"Is there a way to use that to help us?"
Magda wondered. She turned her gaze to the planks that stretched over the pit and the chains hanging from them.
"Why don't they eat the chains?"
"Forged metal is indigestible to them," Birnger said. "Their venom can dissolve raw ore, but not anything that's been fired in a forge."
He studied the planks and the serpents below. He held his hand out to Magda.
"Hold on to me and pull me back if this is a mistake. I want to try something."
Magda took a firm grip on Birnger's hand. She didn't know what he was going to do, but it was clear they had to try something. Knowing that salvation might be so close was torture, especially when any moment might have the demon seeping into her body, consuming her soul. But the Mardag did have its own things to offer, the power of revenge. Magda's fingers tightened on Birnger's hand. He spun around, anxiety on his face.
"What's wrong?"
"Nothing," Magda said. "Just nervous."
She didn't know how to explain the strange thought that had flashed through her mind. The horrible realisation that there was some part of her that wanted to submit to the Mardag and let the demon take over. With salvation so close, how could she possibly resist the prospect of escape?
Birnger set his foot out onto the plank.
As he pressed his weight down, it began to tip upwards from a pivot 10 feet further along. The chains fixed to the bottom rattled against the floor of the pit. Agitated snakes reared back and spat venom up towards the plank. Magda pulled as Birnger shifted back to the landing before any of the poison could land on him.
"Well, that explains how it works anyway," Birnger said.
He tried to put confidence in his tone, but Magda could tell he was rattled by the experience. With his weight withdrawn, the plank tilted back to its former position.
"We'd have to move fast," Magda said. "Too fast to be cautious."
30 feet at a run," Birnger said. "Keep your balance or visit the snakes."
He looked down into the pit. The ore adders had quieted down when the chains stopped moving around them. Venom dripped from the plank. The serpents weren't accurate at any distance.
"Get unlucky. Even a little of that poison on your skin and you'll go mad with pain. You'd fall before you even knew what was happening."
"There has to be a way," Magda said.
She saw that Birnger was surprised by the ferocity in her tone. He'd be even more stunned if he knew why. The insane urge to stay in the castle was nagging at her. To reject its influence, Magda had to focus, had to compel discipline. All the concentration Ottokar had demanded from her when she practiced with the sword, Now she needed that intensity of thought to bring her through the dungeon. Birnga was silent for a moment, watching the venom dripping off the chains. They will attack anything that disturbs them. There's no way to rush across those planks without making the chains move. He plucked at his coat and pointed at Magda's clothes. This isn't thick enough to keep the venom from seeping through to our skin. Magda nodded. She reached into a pouch hanging from her belt and removed a silver coin. What if we give the snakes something else to annoy them? She threw the coin down into the pit. The ore adders near where it landed started spitting at it.
Too much to hope their venom will hurt the other snakes, Birnga said. Their scales are too thick, and the coin doesn't move around long enough to hold their attention. Not long enough to do us any good, at least.
Silence lingered between them. Magda gave the pit closer scrutiny. Finally, she noticed something odd. None of the snakes crawled near a particular spot. She saw why. There was an ugly stain there that had a vaguely serpentine shape.
What do you think that is?
Birnga stared at it for a moment. It looks like a dead ore adder. They decay pretty fast. The other snakes don't seem interested in going near it, Magda observed. In fact, they seem to abhor getting anywhere close to it.
Birnga considered that point for a moment. Eventually, he shook his head.
Maybe they just don't like to be near their own dead. I don't know how that can help us. It's not like we can go down there and get it.
Then we try something else, Magda said.
She removed Ottokar's sword and drew it out of the scabbard.
You have a knife?
Birnga gave her a puzzled look.
What do you have in mind?
He asked as he removed the blade from inside his boot and proffered it to her.
If we can't go down to the snakes, maybe we can bring them up to us.
She removed her jacket and took the knife. Quickly, she began to cut the garment into long strips. She waved her hand at Birnga.
I think we'll need your coat as well.
Birnga was confused as he handed it over to her.
I don't... It's simple.
We need a cord long enough to reach down into the pit, Magda said. Unless you're sneaking a coil of rope around with you, we need to make do. I'll cut these into strips, bind them together, and we'll have something long enough to go into the pit.
What good will that do?
Magda set a hand against Ottokar's sword. Not everything my father taught me about fighting was entirely honourable, she said. He showed me a unique way to deal with someone who is better than me. They couldn't be wearing armour if it was to work, but I don't think these snakes are going to suddenly start putting on steel plate. The last was meant as a jest, but there was no humour in her tone. Tension raced through her body. She hoped Birnga wouldn't notice how firmly she gripped the knife. She prayed he had no idea that her mind was boiling with ghastly images and the insane desire to see his blood spraying across the walls. Magda crouched down beside the coat. She stabbed the knife into it and began to cut.
I'll throw the strips to you, tie them into a cord. And then?
Then I'm going to try and spear one of those snakes and see if we can get across the pit, Magda said. The words were meant more for herself than for him. The urge to stay behind was getting stronger with every heartbeat. It took some time before the cord was long enough to suit Magda's purpose. While Birnga wrote down their plan and left it for Kluger and Inga to read, she busied herself with the last part of her idea. One end of the cord was tied firmly around the hilt of Ottokar's sword, the other secured to the scabbard. Another strip of cloth fastened the scabbard to her arm. She held the sword against her chest. As a little girl, she'd always been confident that her father's sword would be there to protect her. Never could she have dreamed it would be in such an unusual way.
Are you ready?
Birnga asked. Magda didn't say anything, just gave the slightest nod. She fought to focus, to blot out the destructive impulse to stay behind. Fixating upon one of the snakes, Magda braced herself for the effort ahead. She waited and watched, biding her time until everything was perfect before she made her cast. The sword flew down into the pit like a javelin. Its point impaled one of the snakes. The reptile writhed on the blade while those around it spun around and started spitting venom at the sword. True to Birnga's words, the acid did no harm to the forged steel.
Help me pull it back, Magda said.
In striking the snake, the sword had embedded itself into the floor. It took both of them to free it. They carefully began to draw the cord back. Every second they thought the impaled snake would slide off the blade, but their dread wasn't realised. More, Magda could see the other snakes frantically crawling away from the transfixed reptile.
Something's happening to them, Birnga called out.
He pointed, and Magda could see that several of the snakes were twitching in pain.
Be ready to grab the snake when I pull it up, Magda said.
Both of them had wound strips of cloth about their hands. She hoped it was enough to let them safely handle the dying reptile. The hanging sword slowly came up over the edge of the pit. Birnga leaned down to grab the snake. Magda saw the spray of venom that flew past his ear as the wounded ore adder reacted. Before it could strike again, Birnga had his hand around its neck. Grimly, he pulled the writhing body off the blade. Magda scowled at the damage inflicted on her father's sword. The blade was pitted and scarred where it had struck the snake, eaten away as though by a powerful acid.
I thought you said the venom couldn't hurt forged metal.
It can, Birnga said. He held the snake out at arm's length. They could see a ghastly slime bubbling from the serpent's wounds. The ore-added scales steamed and blistered wherever the liquid dripped. Magda understood at once. Her throw had punctured the snake's belly, and now it was leaking digestive juices, stomach acids powerful enough to eat through the metal meals the snakes consumed. Although safe within the stomach, the juices were even more caustic than their venom when the snake's belly was ruptured. That was why they so assiduously avoided the decaying ore adder, lest the leaking acids kill them as well.
We have a way to fight back, Magda said.
She held the sword out to Birnga. Put the snake back on the blade and tie it fast. We'll give the ones in the pit something worse to worry about than those chains. Magda led the way across the plank. She waved the sword from side to side as she moved, spattering drips from the dead serpent down onto the heads of its fellows. Each step she took created pandemonium among the reptiles. The snakes ignored the swaying chains, instead writhing away in panic as the acid dripped down onto them. Birnga followed Magda, plunging after her across the planks. They tipped and swayed, threatening to send the survivors tumbling at every step. Her mind was afire with concentrating upon the footing and keeping the snakes distracted. Magda didn't need the added complaint of the urge to turn back and return to the castle. Only a few feet from the other side, her foot slipped. She stared down into the crawling pit and felt death rushing up at her. Instead, she was tackled from behind and sent sprawling. The cord tied to her arm broke as it was raked across the edge of the pit. Strangely, it was the loss of Ottokar's sword that racked her thoughts more than the closeness of her escape. Birnga rose from the floor, his face aglow with victory. He held his fists in the air and shouted, roaring like a blood reaver with the mound of victims heaped beneath his boots. Magda blinked in fright at the weird analogy and the vile picture it conjured in her mind. The vivid horror of atrocity and its obscene appeal.
We made it,
Birnga crowed as he reached to help Magda to her feet.
I'm sorry if I hurt you, but we made it. We're across.
Magda tried to make sense of what he was saying.
Was there cause to celebrate? She glanced back at the pit. Yes, it was him. He'd grabbed her when she was going to fall. Why had he done that?
Birnga turned away and hurried to the door. He was excited, but not too excited to cast aside all caution. He examined the portal carefully, studying it for any sign of more traps.
I can smell fresh air, he called out. Once we have this open, we can escape the castle.
Escape the castle? Magda shook her head. That wasn't what she wanted. Or was it? Something inside her kept saying she had something important to do in Murghast. Something it would help her do.
Are you all right?
Birnga asked when he looked towards Magda. Did you get hurt? Magda wanted to shout. She wanted to warn him. She wanted to tell him to run, to throw open that door and flee. Flee for his life, flee for his soul. She wanted to do that. But she also wanted to open his belly and watch his blood spill across the floor. She wanted to take his head and carve upon it the skull rune and lay it down before the brass throne. There was worry and concern in Birnger's eyes. He laid his hand on her shoulder. "Are you all right?" he asked again. Shock filled his face as Magda drove Birnger's own knife into his stomach. She twisted and ripped, tearing through flesh and organs. Strength such as she'd never known pulsated down her arm, into her hand, through her fingers. The knife was no longer a knife, it was sacred, an instrument of the blood god to nurture his insatiable thirst. There was no regret in Magda's mind when she watched Birnger stagger away, only numb indifference as he stumbled to the edge of the snake pit. She didn't react when he fell in. He didn't matter. He was nothing. He had no part in what she wanted to do, what she needed to do. Revenge. The thing clawing at the foundations of her soul howled to her. It was slipping away even as it tried to tighten its hold. The chain was broken. It couldn't linger. Not unless she said it could. Revenge, the Mardag hissed, and in its whisper it told Magda why. Why she had to go back into the castle. Why she needed revenge. Epilogue. Kluger made his way through Murghast's dungeon. Every room he entered, he did so with a feeling of dread. Would this be the place where he would find Magda, killed by some murderous device? How far had Birnger managed to lead her? How great was the extent of these deathly halls? There could be no other escape now. Kluger had realised that the moment the demon abandoned Thilo's body. He had no proof of the Mardag's destruction that he could offer that would satisfy Grand Lector Sigard. The castle would burn, along with all inside it. The only chance for life was the escape route guarded by the Count's traps. When he saw that the body of Baron von Wernhur and the decayed husk of his killer had been moved, Kluger's anxiety swelled. Birnger and Magda had got this far. That was to be expected, since they knew the secret of the other rooms. What lay ahead of them would be the unknown. A deadly unknown. Kluger slowly rounded the corner to the other part of the landing. He found the note left by Birnger. His eyes roved across the pencilled words and their final warning. He looked across the fifth chamber, but to his relief, there wasn't any trace of the pulped bodies, only the splinters from the pole. Birnger had been right then. He and Magda had won clear of this trap at least. The witch hunter sprinted across the trapped corridor, calling out numbers as he ran. He reached the other side only a few seconds before the walls crashed together behind him. Their dolorous reverberation pounded through his ears. It was why he didn't hear the footsteps that approached him from round the corner that led to the next room.
"I knew I would find you," Magda called. He looked up to see her walking towards him. The expression on her face was cold, vacant. Only the eyes were vibrant. Kluger could see the rage smouldering in them.
"Praise Sigmar, you're safe," he cried out, relief flooding through him.
But even as he said the words, he knew something was wrong. There was a smell, a charnel reek that grew in intensity.
"No one is safe," Magda said.
As she spoke, her voice began to collapse inwards, deepening into a bestial snarl that reverberated not in Kluger's ears, but in the depths of his soul.
"She gave herself to me, that I might thank you on behalf of her mother," rasped the Mardag's voice inside Kluger's spirit.
The enraged eyes turned bright crimson as tears of blood spilled down Magda's cheeks. The Mardag raised one of her hands and reached out for Kluger. The pale skin cracked, blood spurting from torn veins as the fingers lengthened into bony claws.
"Revenge."
The word echoed through the dungeons of Murghast long after the witch hunter's screams fell into silence. That was Castle of Blood by C.L. Werner, read by Claire Wyatt. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.